The Gemara in Daf Nun Dalet, Amud Aleph, about 10 lines from the bottom, says like this. It discusses, the Mishnah says, Arah Makam Shanasu Nisim Yisrael, a person who sees a place where miracles occur to Klal Yisrael, Omer Baruch Shasa Nisim Ma'avaseinu Ba'Makam Hazeh. He has to make a special bracha and say, Baruch Shasa Nisim Ma'avaseinu Ba'Makam Hazeh. And then the Gemara goes and mentions these places. What we'll try to do in Shir is to try to pinpoint as much as possible where the locations are. I'm not here for the practical application. In other words, the person comes to these places, should he make a bracha or not? That's a shayla that should be asked to his local Orthodox rabbi, but we're going to use whatever geographical, archaeological evidence we have in order to come as close as possible to these places. So let's read the Baisa on Mundal and Amanal towards the bottom. Dan Rabbanan. Haroim Abos HaYam. A person who sees the place where Bnei Yisrael crossed the Yam, coming up Pesach, and Shvi Yisrael Pesach, Bnei Yisrael crossed the Yam, so the Reed Sea, not the Red Sea, but the Reed Sea, the Yam Suf, the Yabasha on dry land, Ma'abos HaYarden, and the place where Bnei Yisrael crossed the Jordan River in the days of Yeshua. Ma'abos Nachle Arnon, the place where Bnei Yisrael crossed a place called Nachle Arnon, which the Gemara will explain soon, Avnei El-Gavish by Morad Beis Choron. Avnei El-Gavish are massive special stones in Morad Beis Choron, which we'll explain later on. The Evan Shabikash is Og Gmar Chabashan al Yisrael. The stone that Og Gmar Chabashan wanted to throw on Klal Yisrael. The Evan Shiyashav Alei Moshe B'Shar Shiyashav Yashav Mechalam Bamolek. And the stone that Moshe Rabbeinu sat on when Yeshua went to war against Amalek. That's in Pashas B'Shalach. V'Ishto Shalot. And Lot's wife, who we know turned into a pillar of salt when Lot was running away from Sodom. The Chomas Yericho Shenivla Benkoma. And the walls of Yericho, which were swallowed in the ground, in the beginning of the Sefer Yeshua. Al Kulam Tzach Shiyitin Odov Ashvach Lepnei Amakom. For all of them, he has to praise Hashem and say the bracha, baruch shasa nisim ma'avaseinu ba'makom hazeh. So the Gemara goes and analyzes them one by one, and we will try to get to those locations. The first is Ma'avos HaYam. It says, Ravav Bnei Yisrael Bzach HaYam Ba'Yabosha. Ma'avos HaYam, the place where Bnei Yisrael crossed the Yam. You have your source pages. And we're going to start with the graphics page, the source number 3, link, Sinai map according to Sefer Elam Haseh. This is a map in Sefer Elam Haseh by Avdon Schwartz. And take a look at the picture. And on the left side, first of all, you see Bnei Yisrael. Let's familiarize ourselves first of all with the map. The center of the map over here is the Sinai Peninsula. And the main part of the map here is the Sinai Peninsula. To the left is Egypt, and to the right, Saudi Arabia and Eber Yarden. Up north, up on top, you see Eretz Yisrael. That's the southern part of Eretz Yisrael appears in the map. The red line that you see is the assumed trail that Bnei Yisrael took as they went out of Mitzrayim. Now, the Gemara Nechen and Daf Rav says a very interesting thing. Vayamru al Yom b'Yamsuf. Take a look at this map that we're showing here, and on the middle left side, you see like a semicircle. You see a semicircle shape, which is to represent the way Bnei Yisrael went out of Mitzrayim. They went through the Yam. Now, in other words, instead of crossing from one side to the other, they went in a semicircle. And you have over there 12 strips, because we know the pasuk says it goes the yamtuf with zarim. Hashem cut the yamtuf into different strips, which means each shave is went in its own path. So there's 12 paths, and that's how he draws it. Why does he draw it in such a strange way, and not in a simple way, of nezor across the yamtuf? From one side to the other. So the answer is, this is all based on a dosu senachin, Dr. Zvav Amnal. A dosu senachin, Dr. Zvav Amnal, if it says in the pasuk, Vayamru al yom b'yamtuf. When Klaizah crossed the Yam Suf, they rebelled against the Ribbono Shelo. How did they rebel against the Ribbono Shelo? When Bnei Yisrael crossed through the Yam, and all of a sudden the Egyptians disappear, Bnei Yisrael were not yet convinced that the Mitzrayim drowned in the sea. They said, maybe just like we walked out of the Yam safely on the other side, maybe the Mitzrayim will also come out safely also on the other side. They were afraid the Egyptians will come, and then Hashem had to convince the Yam to spit out the bodies and the chariots of the Egyptians to show them that the Egyptians actually died. That's what the Gemara says. So Tosfos asks a very interesting question over there. And that Tosfos is quoted on the Hebrew PDF source page. In source number one, you have the link to the Hebrew PDF source page, section 3.1. Kishem Chanra Olam Mitzad Zeh, Kachem Olam Mitzad Achim. Yesterday, tomorrow, Tosfos says, I quoted the whole Tosfos, but I'm not going to read the whole Tosfos. Tosfos has a basic question. Echo Yisrael Bosei Dor Kukach Mitzad Emon. But they saw this experience, this unbelievable nace, this unbelievable miracle. They walked through the Yam in dry land. How could anyone, especially for Yisrael then, on such a high madrega, how could they in any way think that the Ribbono Shel Olam will also make the same miracle for the Egyptians, and the Egyptians will also survive the Yam and walk out in dry land? How could they even be so katan emun? That's what Tosfos says. So Tosfos gives an answer, and based on this answer is what appears here in this map. Tosfos says, "Va'omer Rabbi b'shem Av Rabbi Shmuel she'Yisrael la'avros hayom la'rochbo mitzad zelizeh shemkeni mamam la'lechus la'aretz Yisrael ha'aretzua achus avro bayam la'orach hayam ha'chepono la'midbo la'tzarech." So Tosfos says that Klai Yisrael did not cross the Yam from one side to the other, because then they would be too close to coming to Eretz Yisrael. Instead, they went into the Yam and came out like on a semicircle and came out on the same side, but a little farther up. And that's how they were able to run away from the Egyptians. And thus, Bnei Yisrael are afraid that maybe now the Egyptians disappeared. Maybe they never went into the Yam at all. Maybe the Egyptians did a maneuver on the left side and will catch up with them on dry land. But not that they ever thought for a moment that that a miracle will happen for the Egyptians. That's what Tosfos says. Now, if we look at the map over here, we have to realize today the map, of course, is different, and that's because we have the Suez Canal, and the Suez Canal cuts off Egypt from the Sinai Peninsula. To the left is Egypt, to the right is the Sinai Peninsula, and the Suez Canal cuts through the Bitter Lakes and the Great Lakes over there, and there's no way to actually travel from one side to the other without crossing a body of water. But in ancient times, it was possible. Now, Tosfos, who had a question, and based on that came to his conclusion, assumed that when Bnei Yisrael crossed the Yam Suf, it was crossing from one side to the other, and the Egyptians likewise would be forced to cross one side to the other. And that's what Tosfos says. How could they think that they also cross in dry land? But in reality, when we look at the map over here, it's clear that even if we'll accept Tosfos' idea, we don't have to accept the exact way that Tosfos describes it. What do I mean? I mean, in other words, all Tosfos wants to say is that there's a way for the Egyptians to catch up with Bnei Yisrael without having a miracle happen to them. Bnei Yisrael had a miracle and they went through the Yam in the dry land. The Egyptians could have done the same thing, could have gotten to the same spot without crossing in the Yam. They could have crossed on dry land. So, there's an interesting article by a person named Moshe Dayan, nothing to do, no relation to the Israeli former foreign minister Moshe Dayan, but this person is a hydrologist, and he did some research based on ancient maps before the Suez Canal was dug on the locations of the what the topography looked like before the Suez Canal was dug. And he came to the conclusion that the Gulf of Suez, as you see, that ends over there right near the spot where Bnei Yisrael Azraq crossed, the Gulf of Suez, there are two reefs over there, which when there's low tide, the water is very shallow. And if the tide drops even lower, so then it actually can be in dry land. And his conclusion is that that's where Bnei Yisrael crossed. They crossed on those reefs over there, which are normally submerged in water, but with a strong wind, they can be exposed. If you take a look, once again, at the source page, number 7, English map of the Exodus, if you take a look at that map over there, you will see that he draws a route he draws a route of the Israel going, and indeed crossing the northern edge of the Gulf of Suez. Now, there are other opinions also, and there'll never be one opinion on an issue, but there'll never be one opinion on the issue. But this is pretty much the accepted opinion. Now you take a look at this English map. At this English map, and you see the line cutting from the land of Goshen, going down southward, and then turning eastward. And you see over there Baal Tefon and Piachiros, and you see the site with an arrow mentioned crossing the Red Sea. So he has them crossing at the northern tip of the Gulf of Suez, pretty much. And for this, it's simple. The Egyptians could have easily caught up with them on the other side, seeing the Bnei Israel cross from one side to the other. The Egyptians could have easily come around on the dry land and catch up to them. And that is what Bnei Israel feared. But we're not compelled to give the exact drawing the way Tosfos gives it. We take Tosfos as I give it. Now, in the end, we know that later on, Bnei Israel camped on Yam Suf also, which is another thing that Tosfos was bothered. How could they be camping on the Yam Suf when they already passed the Yam Suf? But that's if you assume that the Yam Suf is like a river, and you pass the river, and you kept them going. So how are you crossing and camping at the same river? But that's all. But if we take a look at the map over here, we see Bnei Israel, when they went into Sinai, instead of going straight, Hashem had them curve around. They went southward. And as they're going southward towards what many believe is Har Sinai, they also camped along the Yam Suf. So that question of Tosfos does not prove either way. The way we're describing it can also fit in what Tosfos says. So that is assumed to be location, the northern tip of the Gulf of Suez. That is the place where Bnei Israel crossed the Yam Suf. Next. The next thing is Mabros Hayarjan. Let's refresh our memory. When Bnei Israel come into Eretz Canaan, they are coming from the eastern side. They are coming from Jordan today, and they will cross over the Jordan River from east to west and come out opposite Yericho, and Yericho is the first city that Bnei Israel will capture. Now, the description is given in Sefer Yehoshua. The description is given in Sefer Yehoshua. Paragimel, the whole description, when Bnei Israel went to cross the Yarden. So it mentions, first of all, Yeshua Paragimel Pasagalef. Look at the Hebrew source, page 1.2. By asking Yeshua Baboker, by Yisu Mashitim, by Avar the Yarden, Hubachol Bnei Israel, by Lino Shem Tzem Yavar. When Bnei Israel left the original camp, they got up and they moved, and they came to Jordan River, and they spent the night over there by the Jordan River. So, Bnei Israel were not camped exactly by the Jordan River. They were camped a little before the Jordan River. So let's try to find out where Bnei Israel were camped and where Bnei Israel crossed. I quote over here in the Hebrew source, page 1.1, from an Eivin Daf Nunhei. Meisiv Rav Chista. Vayachim al Yardein, Mibes HaYashimos, Adov El Hashitim Ba'arvos Mo'ov. The Pasuk says, they camped on the Jordan River from Beis HaYashimos to Avel Hashitim. V'yama Rabbi Bar Bachana. Rabbi Bar Bachana said, "L'didi chazi li'ahu asra. I saw that spot. V'havit lo saparsi at lo saparsi. I saw the spot, and it's 3 parsos by 3 parsos. 12 miles by 12 miles. That's how we saw it. And by the way, the Gemara in the Dalet on the base, when it discusses the stone that Og Melchaboshim wanted to throw on Klai Yisrael, so the Gemara says that he took a mountain up 3 parsos, and Rashi quotes the same Gemara over here that I quoted for you, the Gemara in Eruvin, that was 3 parsos by 3 parsos. So we're looking for a place that's 3 parsos by 3 parsos. If you go now to source number 6, the aerial map of Bnei Israel's camp. Source number 6, please bring it up. It might be a drop. It could be a little Could be a little big file, so I'll give you a minute or two. It's a little high. I'll just tell you a couple of words about this map. This map is property of Warp Productions. A friend of mine who worked a lot on satellite imagery, and you have to get your bearings here because this map is not facing north. It's facing northeast. What cuts across this entire picture, that straight line from the upper left to the center of the right, is the Jordan River. On the bottom right corner, you see the Dead Sea. So the Jordan River is a trickle that actually goes to the Dead Sea. Many people who come the first time, it's a little disappointing after they read the names and say for Yeshua, and then they see the Jordan River. It's really not that impressive. Although, if in ancient times there's a lot more water there, today there's a dam that prevents the water from flowing, and at this time of the year, Nisan is when it's usually flowing the as highest because the snow is melting up north by the Hermon. So this time of the year, when the names happen on the 10th of Nisan, which is in 2 days from now, the water was actually overflowing on the banks. So we have the Jordan River coming across. The upper part of the picture, you see the mountains of Abraham, the other side of the Jordan River. This is the territory of Reuben. And the lower part of the picture, you see Yericho, and that's the green spot pretty much in the center of the picture. That's the city of Yericho, an oasis in the desert. And below it, you see a bunch of mountains. That's already the Judea Desert and the Yemen Desert. So where did Bnei Yisrael camp and where did they cross? Take a look at this line, that red line that cuts across the picture from upper right to towards lower left. And basically, if you see where it begins, there's a circle over there with number 7. And that area over there is a flat area underneath the mountains. And that fits the description of where Bnei Yisrael camped. They camped on the Jordan River, not exactly on the location of the Jordan, but close to it. And sitting in that area over there, they sat in that area. That's where they camped. That was the last place that they camped before Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. Moshe Rabbeinu climbed the mountains. Alei Rosh HaPisgah told him to climb up. He climbed the mountains towards the upper part of the picture, and towards the Hanabo, and that's where he died. And then Bnei Yisrael are left down, and they're about to cross. The first day, they make the step from where 7 is until the Jordan River. And the next day, the big miracle happens. What is the miracle? It is described in the Hebrew PDF source page 4.1. It says like this. This is just a quote of part of the story. Yeshua told the Kohanim who carry the Aron to take the Aron and walk with it ahead of Bnei Yisrael. Normally the Aron walked in the middle. In other words, there were 6 Shvatim walked ahead of it and 6 Shvatim behind it. But today the Aron led the way and the Kohanim carried the Aron and they walked to the Jordan River, and the moment they set the foot in the Jordan River, the water stopped flowing. The water did not pass the Aron. The water just piled up and piled up and piled up towards the north, while on the other side, towards the south, in the picture, it's towards the right, it dried up, and Bnei Yisrael were able to cross. So we read the Pasuk, Vayamdu Hamayim Hayoradim Milamala. The water is coming down from above. Komonei Decho, they stood on a high wall. Hachek Ma'od Me'adam Hayir. Distant from the city called Adam Hashem Mitzat Tartan, which is near Tzotan, by Yordim al Yam Harava Yam HaMelech Taman Echrosu. And those going down on Yam Harava, those going down to the Yam HaMelech Taman Echrosu, they stopped. V'amavru Negedi Yericho. And Bnei Yisrael did the actual crossing opposite the city of Yericho. So we have the description. The waters are piling up on the left side of the picture, distant from Adam HaYir, which is not visible in this picture. And the other side, the right side of the Jordan River, is drying up, and Bnei Yisrael cross right opposite Yericho, which means if we see the place where you have the red line crossing, that is the location where Bnei Yisrael crossed. So we have a fairly decent idea of where the Nes took place. We don't know the exact place. Let me mention that in Sefer Yoshua, as was commanded by Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas Kisavo, when they crossed the Yarden, they had to commemorate the Nes. And the way that they commemorated the Nes was that they took 12 massive stones from the Jordan River, and they set them up in a place called Gilgal, and these stones were there, the special size stones were there to show the people where Bnei Yisrael crossed the Jordan River. We do not know where these stones are today, but in the time of Chazal, in the time of the Yerushalmi, in the time of the Amoraim of Eretz Yisrael, these stones were still known. The Gemara in Sota mentions an Amora who says that he was able to evaluate the weight of these stones. So the stones were there. Furthermore, we have a very interesting, in a town called Medba, on today that's in Jordan, on the other side of the Jordan River, they found a mosaic floor with a map of Eretz Yisrael from the 5th, 6th century. Now, it's not a map as we know per se today, because there's no way of actually doing all the measurements. It's a sketchy map. But it's a sketchy map that reflected the towns and cities that were there from this day. That day that it was done. And indeed over there, there is a church sitting on the site of where those stones were to have been. So it seems clearly that in those days, which fits pretty much the time that La'avdil, the source that I mentioned, Marasota, it seems that clearly those stones were known in those days. So not so far back, we can say about 1500 years ago, the stones where Bnei Yisrael crossed were there. So it's fairly reasonable that we can actually give a pinpoint to location opposite Yericho on the Jordan River. As I said, when you come to the Jordan River today and you see it, it is very disappointing. It's very disappointing. It's not really that impressive. It's a small trickle of water. Keep in mind that ever since the last 100 years, even less, the last 80 years, the Jordan River, which flows through the Kinneret, Lake Kinneret by Tiberia, there's a dam at the exit of the Kinneret, and the amount of water that goes through from the Kinneret to the Jordan River is a very limited amount. Most of the water is stored in the Kinneret. It's used for Israel's drinking water. Today, a third of Israel's fresh water, drinking water, comes from the Kinneret. So the amount of water you see today in the Jordan River is a fraction of what it was in ancient times, and that's also a reason why the Dead Sea is drying up, because of the Jordan River actually feeds the Dead Sea, and being that this main tributary is limited, so the amount of water in the Dead Sea is also shrinking, and it's shrinking and shrinking, which will bring us to another section when we talk about Sodom, try to locate Sodom. That's an important factor in trying to identify the location of Sodom. So we have the Mabos HaYarden, as we said, opposite Yericho. That is the place where we can believe that Bnei Yisrael crossed. Next, we have Mabos Nachle Arnon. One second. Mabos Nachle Arnon. What is Mabos Nachle Arnon? The Gemara tells a story that the Amorim, who saw Bnei Yisrael about to cross Nachal Arnon, hid in hidden caves, and were hoping when Bnei Yisrael will come, they will ambush Bnei Yisrael and kill it. And what did Hashem do? Hashem made a miracle, and the two mountains on both sides of Nachal Arnon came close to each other, and those who were in the caves got crushed by the stones, and Bnei Yisrael saw this tremendous miracle, and they said a special Shira in Parshas Chukas. They said a special Shira to commemorate this miss. Mabos Nachle Arnon. Now, I'll tell you before I begin that I really have no idea where exactly the location was that Bnei Yisrael crossed Nachal Arnon. But I will use the maps to show you where Nachal Arnon is today, so we will have some idea. Today, with satellite imagery, it's very easy to find, but if we go to source number 8, map of the Dead Sea, so take a look at this map, which I took off some site on the internet. I think the credit is there on the map itself. Take a look at the Dead Sea. which is at the bottom of the picture, Dead Sea, Salt Sea. And take a look on the right, you have, well, first of all, Shittim and Pisgah and Hanavoh, which we mentioned before. Shittim is where Bnei Israel were camped. Pisgah and Hanavoh is where Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. So Moshe Rabbeinu climbed from Shittim to Hanavoh. Below that, you have in brown letters, Reuven. And continue going farther south along the Dead Sea, you see a mention of Moab. Between Reuben and Moab, you have the words Arnon River. The Arnon River, Nachal Arnon, I think today now because in Jordan it's called Wadi Zarka, is a deep ravine that actually cuts between two sections. It cuts the other side of the Jordan River into two. We know that when Bnei Yisrael came to out of Mitzrayim and they're coming into Canaan, they cross the Nachal Arnon, and that's where they go to war against Sichon Melech Amori. Sichon captured from Moab the northern part of the territory north of Nachal Arnon, and he left him with a small territory south of Nachal Arnon. So Nachal Arnon is the tremendous ravine that separates between the two. Interesting, we say in Rav Yosher, Adi Avraham Hashem, Adi Avraham Zukaniso. So the Targum, in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu davens that the fear that the nations got from the miracle of Kriyas Yam Suf should accompany Klai Yisrael Adi Avraham Hashem, Adi Avraham Zukaniso, until they cross into Eretz Canaan. And the Targum says an interesting thing. Adi Avraham Hashem, one is talking about until they cross the Yarden, and the other is talking about until they cross the Arnon River. So this is where the Arnon River is. It's, as I said, it is cutting the east side of Yam HaMelech into two. In satellite imagery, it's a very impressive, deep ravine. It's a nice canyon to go. I was over there. I've seen pictures of it. And again, but it's a very long stream. So there's no real way that I know of where we can actually pinpoint where that miracle happened that Bnei Israel crossed. Although, most logically, Bnei Israel crossed east on the east side of Nachal Arnon, because Bnei Israel are not coming into Moab territory. And Moab territory is the west side of Nachal Arnon. So it's south of Nachal Arnon to the west. So therefore, the logic has that where Bnei Israel crossed the Arnon is somewhere on the eastern part of Nachal Arnon, not on the west. So that's important to note. Next, the Brisa tells us, Avnei El Gavish. Avnei El Gavish, the Gemara says, what are these Avnei El Gavish? These are special stones. This appears in Sefer Yoshua, the story of when Bnei Yisrael went to war against the Canaanites. So Hashem made the famous miracle. Shemesh beGibeon Dam, V'yerech beEmek HaElyon. Hashem held up the sun in Gibeon and held up the moon in Emek HaElyon. And that's a famous miracle. But as Bnei Yisrael were routing the Canaanites, Hain b'morad beis choron, I'm sorry that I didn't quote to you this on the source page, Hain b'morad beis choron, v'Hashem eshlich aleim avonim v'dolos mei shamayim. They are in morad beis choron, which we'll explain in a moment, and Hashem tossed upon them heavy stones, big stones from Shemayim, and killed them. Rabim ha-shameitu b'avne ha-barad, ha-shameitu b'nei Yisrael. More were killed by the stones min ha-shamayim than those that were killed by what Bnei Yisrael killed directly. What is Morad Beit Choron? For a little geography of Eretz Yisrael, you have the coastal plain, then you have the lowlands called the Shvelah, and then you have the Judean hills. Climbing from the lowlands into the Judean hills is not very easy. It's a steep climb, and there are only a few routes that can be taken. In other words, a few nechalim, a few streams that flow along those you can climb, along those ridges. You can't just climb any way you want, because you'll be going up and down the whole day. So, in ancient times, as like today, pretty much, there are certain routes, and those are the only logical routes to take. Therefore, the routes are very strategic, and whoever controlled the route, of course, that was the key to controlling the entire land. For example, today we have the road going up from from Tel Aviv to Yerushalayim, goes on a place called Shar Hagai, Babu Wad, and that is an access route which was used throughout generations, except in the Roman times, they didn't exactly make the road in the valley, they made it on top of the mountain. Another route, which is more famous, is the route of Beis Choron. In Sefer Lachim, we see that the two cities of Beit Choron. There's Upper Beit Choron and there is Lower Beit Choron. And the two are connected by a narrow road. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us a thing called Malos Beis Moron. In other words, it's a narrow road that only one person can go at a time. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, what do you do when you have two camels who are about to ascend Beit Choron? Now you have two camels. Everyone wants to go first. He doesn't want to wait for the other guy to come. So who gives way to who? So the Gemara discusses the status. It depends. If you came from a closer town or not. It depends if you're full, you're laden with stuff or not. That's not important for us. But what's clear from this is that it's a narrow ascent to the Judean hills. Being that it's a narrow ascent, enemy that climbs this ascent, if they are defeated, they're running away, it's very hard for them to run away. When you have a formation, 3, 4, 5 people wide, running in a narrow trail, it's inevitable that the people cannot scatter properly. People will be trampled by the next guy in back who's running faster, etc. Throughout history of Eretz Yisrael, there have been at least 3, 4 decisive battles where Bnei Yisrael have routed their enemies in this ascent of Beit Choron. One of them was in the days of Yeshua, as I mentioned. One was the days of Yehuda Maccabee, who routed the Greeks. Later on, right before the Churban, the Romans made an unsuccessful attempt to ascend to the Judean hills towards Yerushalayim, and Bnei Yisrael defeated them also in Ma'aleh Beit Choron. To this very day, even in World War I, when the British came to capture from the Turks, they also had major difficulty in capturing this ascent. So this ascent is well known today. In modern terminology, we're talking about Road 443. Road 443 is another ascent from today, the modern city of Modi'in, going up to Yerushalayim. So the location of Morad Beit Choron is clear. There are two Arab villages, one by the name of Beit Ur Atachta, and one is by the name of Beit Ur Apuka. And they are both, one is Beit Choron Upper, and one is Beit Choron Lower. In Arabic today, they even carry very similar names to what it was in ancient times. So we know where the road is exactly. Can we pinpoint the exact location where these stones are? It's a little difficult. In Das Mikra, in a supplement at the end of Sefer Yeshua in the latest edition, they have a story about massive volcanic stones that appear in a certain place, and that don't seem to belong there. They claim, though geologically, that they fell off from the mountains on top, but these are massive stones. I'm not saying yes or no. It's evident from the Gemara, the Brisa mentions these specific places. It's clear that in the days of the Brisa, these sites were known. There's no doubt that they knew exactly what they're writing, is not just hearsay. So evidently these stones were visible in those days. Perhaps it's these stones mentioned in the Das Mikra, these volcanic stones, but we can't say for sure. But either way, Morad Beit Choron, we know exactly where it is. Then the Gemara mentions the stone that Og Melech HaBashan wanted to throw on Klal Yisrael, which I really have no idea where it is, but we have to remember, it's simple. Og Melech HaBashan was the king of Bashan. Bashan is the Golan Heights of today. Bnei Yisrael capture the southern part of the other side of the Jordan, of Eglah Yarden, where the center of Jordan is today, let's say the area of Amman and Jerush, and then Vayifnu Vayalu Derech HaBashan. They turn upwards to climb to Bashan, which is north, and there Og Melech HaBashan came to go to war against him. So now was the place to look for it should be somewhere in northern Jordan today. That should be the place that we want to see that stone that Og Melech HaBashan wanted to throw his life. Then we go on, the stone that Moshe Rabbeinu saw when he went to war with Amalek, that I really have no clue, unfortunately, to help you where to search for that in the Sinai Desert. Then we have Ishtar Shalot, Lot's wife, the story of Lot's wife. So let's refresh our memory. Lot, Avram's nephew, is living in Sodom, and Sodom is a sinful city, and Hashem sends a malachim to destroy Sodom, and at the same time, he sends the messengers, he sends the malachim to rescue Lot and his family. So Lot and his wife and his two daughters are running away from Sodom, and he warned them like this. He says, don't turn back and don't stand in the whole flat land. Go up to the mountains. Meaning the Dead Sea is in a very low plain, a low area. He says, go up to the mountains. And there, Lot turns to him and says, I'm sorry, but I can't go to the mountains. Ramachi, I might die in the mountains. Why? He's not used to the year or whatever. So instead he says, let me go to this place. This city is closed. Vehimitar is a small city, meaning it's a small city, so no big deal if you don't destroy it. Imolta Nashama. Let me run away from there. And the Malach replies to him, he says, because he mentioned it as a small city, therefore the name of the city becomes Tzoar. And Lot goes over there and he takes refuge in Tzoar. But later on, Lot went up from Tzoar and he went into the mountains. And over there is the whole story with Lot and his two daughters and the birth of Amram and Moab. So first of all, if we want to find the place where Lot's wife is, we're going to have to find exactly where Sodom and Amorah are. Now let me tell you that if you're traveling in Eretz Yisrael today, and you're going along the west side of the Dead Sea, when you get to the lower place, the southern place, there's a big pillar over there in the Salt Mountain that looks like a woman, and there's a big sign over there, Lot's wife. Why Lot's wife? Because the Ministry of Tourism of Israel decided that this is where Lot's wife was. As we'll see, very, very questionable if that is actually a location of Lot's wife. First of all, we're going to try to pinpoint where Sodom and Amorah are in the first place. And then we'll be able to get closer to pinpointing where Lot ran away. There are basically two prevalent theories, whether or not Sodom and Amorah are in the northern part of the Dead Sea or they are in the southern part of the Dead Sea. Why would I think that they're in the northern part of the Dead Sea? So let's go to our Hebrew source, page 5.1. It says like this, Bereshis Perek Gimel. Ve'yelech l'masav minegev ad Beiseil. Ad ha'makom ashaya shema'alo batchila ben Beiseil v'enai. Avraham Avinu comes back from Mitzrayim, and he goes back to the same place as where he was originally. And he comes to a place, Beiseil. He comes to Beiseil. He comes to between Beiseil and Ai, and that's where he goes to the original Mizbeach that he did, and between Beit El and Ai, and he comes to the Mizbeach that he did, and over there he calls B'Shem Hashem, and then it goes on with the story. V'gam l'lot ha'olech az Avram ha'yotan avak av'olim. Avram Avinu had lots of sheep, and Lot had lots of sheep, and the land wasn't enough, and they got into fights, and finally Avram says to Lot, you know what, let's separate, you go one way, I'll go the other way, and there'll be peace. Persecute. Vayisa Lot is enough. Lot lifts up his eyes. Vayaras kokikara yardim kichula mashke. He sees the flat plain of the Jordan Valley. It's full and luscious with water. Lifnei shachais Hashem and Sodom and Amorah. Before Hashem destroyed Sodom and Amorah, kigan Hashem keret Mitzrayim. The place is green and luscious like Eretz Mitzrayim. Bo achot Tzoar until Tzoar. So Lot chose to go to the Jordan Valley. And they separate from Avram Avinu. Avram Nashav Be'etz Kanan. Avram sits in Eretz Kanan. And Lot sits Ba'arei HaKikar in the cities of the plain. So let's go now, once again, the same map that we used a moment ago, the English, the map of the Dead Sea, source number 8. And let's go to the northern part of the map. And over there you see the red Ephraim, and you see the red Benjamin, and that's the years where later on, Shevet Ephraim ben Yamin sat. Underneath the word Ephraim you see Beit El. And to the right of it you see Ai. So between Beit El and Ai is the place where they are camped, and that's where they're deciding to take a look. And Lot looks around, and he sees the flat land until Sodom and Amorah is very luscious. It's kind of difficult from where Lot is sitting up there to see all the way down south to the southern part of the Dead Sea. And therefore, some suggest that the location of Sodom and Amorah, which of course were destroyed and so far there's no archaeological evidence to it, that the location of Sodom and Amorah should be in the northern part of the Dead Sea in the year of Yericho. That is the northern theory. But there is also another theory, and that theory sends it to the southern part of the Dead Sea. If we take a look over here and we see the map, let's take a look at the Dead Sea over here. Let's take a look at the Dead Sea and analyze it properly. The Dead Sea, you can say, is a long, narrow, oblong body of water, but in the center of, or in the two-thirds down the center, you see a small part of dirt coming out. You see a small part of dirt coming out, almost slicing the Dead Sea into two. Northern part and southern part. Now let's go to another map of the, let's go to source number 5. Let's go to source number 5. And here we have two satellite images of what it looks like today. This is the southern part of the Dead Sea. These are two satellite images taken by NASA. You see the dates over there. And take a look. You have the northern part of the Dead Sea, which seems to be very, very deep. You have the southern part of the Dead Sea today, which actually is full of lines. Why is it full of lines? Okay, I'll tell you the secret. Today, there are, as the Dead Sea works, the Israeli side and the Jordanian side, where the water is dried up and the minerals are extracted, including potash, magnesium, and stuff like that. It's a very lucrative business. And the southern part of the Dead Sea is as you see today, it's salt evaporation ponds. The center of the Dead Sea is totally dry. Now, as I mentioned before, the Dead Sea has been drying up in the last 30 years and shrinking. And when it's shrunk, we found an amazing thing. The northern part of the Dead Sea is a very deep sea, 400 meters deep. By the way, in Chazal, the Dead Sea is known as Yam HaShel Sodom, the Sea of Sodom. So that's already a clue that we're looking in the right place, because it's referred to as Yam HaShel Sodom. If you go to the Hebrew source page, for example, if you go to the Hebrew source page 5.2, I quote over here a Gemara in Shabbos. Ki after Avdimi, when Avdimi came, Amar, he says, May olam latov agav rabbi yama de Sodom. A person never drowned in the Sea of Sodom. Amav Yosef, Sav Yosef says, Hafucha Sodom, Hafucha Mila. This whole thing doesn't seem to make sense. Gavro de lo tova, Kshura tova. A human didn't drown, but a wooden beam did. Amav Abaya, Lomi Barakam. That's not what he's saying. Lomi Barakshura, Dafilu Bachon, Mimashiba, Omatov. A beam floats on any water. Elafilu Gavro, but a human being, the tova Bachon, Mimashiba, Olam, who will drown, who can drown, Lo Lema, in any other body of water, the Yam of the Sodom will come up. But in the Dead Sea, in the Yam of Sodom, he cannot drown. Today you come to the Dead Sea, you know you can lie on your back and float without doing any effort, because the salt content in the water is so high that you actually can float. It doesn't mean there haven't been tragedies, but a drowning, a person lying on his back, will not drown. So we're talking about the Yam of Sodom, was surely in this region. But we're trying to pinpoint the northern part or the southern part. So why are there two parts to the Dead Sea? So let's stick with this satellite image. The top part of the Dead Sea is very deep. It's 400 meters deep. The southern part of the Dead Sea is very shallow. All it is 15 to 20 meters. The central part of the Dead Sea is even higher than both. And when the whole thing was submerged in water, so water came down from the northern part to the southern part. But today, that the water level in the Dead Sea is actually shrinking, lower, dropping. So the middle part of the Dead Sea is totally dry. And the southern part should also theoretically dry up very soon. Except that, as I mentioned to you, being that this is used to extract minerals, so the Israeli Dead Sea Works didn't want it to dry up, and therefore they dug a small canal connecting the upper part and the lower part of the Dead Sea, and that's how water reaches the southern part. Otherwise, it would have all drowned. Why is this difference between the two parts. What makes sense is that the original Dead Sea only reached the upper part, was only the upper part of the Dead Sea. After Sodom and Amorah were overturned, and Sodom and Amorah are on the south, we're going with the southern theory, Sodom and Amorah are on the southern part of the Dead Sea. So, it made a crater, and the water also covered, the southern part of the Dead Sea. But, as it's a shallow area, and being that it's a shallow area, all it is 15, 20 meters deep. That is another theory. So which of these theories is right? So that's very important for us, of course, if we want to see where Ishtar Shalot, where to look for, which of the theories are right. Of course, we never close the door on any theory, but I will say what I believe is correct, and for that, I'll bring you another Gemara. Gemara in Psachim. This Gemara you can find on the Hebrew Source, page 2.1. The Gemara says like this. Amamar. Me'alos ha-shachar anei tzachama chameshes milet. A person can walk from alos ha-shachar, from when? Dawn. Until the sun rises, 5 miles. Minolan, how do we know the Chassidut says the Gemara shachar alav ha-yitzah malachim belot lemur? When Lot was in Sodom, running away, which incidentally the Chorban of Sodom took place on the first day of Pesach. Lot running away, Ukumar Shachar Allah, as the dawn is rising, and the Malachim say to Lot, scram, get out of here. And Lot runs away, and he comes to Tzoar. And when does he arrive at Tzoar? The Pasuk says, Hashem Mashiach Tzoar Aret, for Lot brought Tzoar. The sun comes on the rises, and Lot arrives at Tzoar. So the distance that a man is able to walk is what it takes to walk from Sodom till Tzoar. Rabbi Chanina says, "Didi chazili ahu asra." Chanina says, "I saw the difference. I saw the distance between Sodom and Tzoar. And it's exactly 5 miles." So what does he say? He says, "I saw the distance between Tzoar and Sodom, and it's 5 miles." So let's see if we can find it. What do we have? We have the city of Tzoar. Tzoar is today. And if we go back to the map of the Dead Sea 8, take a look at the southeastern part of the Dead Sea, and you see in red letters Tzoar put over there. Why is Tzoar put over there? This identification is fairly positive, definite. Why is it fairly definite? Because Tzoar survived, and to this very day, this area is a very luscious area. Truth of the matter is, when you come to the Dead Sea and you see how hot it is, it's the lowest place on earth, it's very hard to believe that there was any real decent civilization here. But Tzoar is a classic example of a stream which comes down from the mountains nearby and waters the entire area, and the entire area is very luscious and green. And we can imagine that in ancient times there were another 4 similar cities around, Sodom, Amorah, Adma, and Tzvoyim, nearby. Tzoar is identified as such based on Josephus. The historian in the second Mishnah Mikdash, Josephus mentions that in the southeastern point of the Dead Sea, there is a city of Tzoar. So Tzoar, we know it's positive identification. Comes along Rab Chanina and says, "I saw the distance between Sodom and Tzoar, and it's exactly 5 miles." So if Rab Chanina knew what Tzoar was, obviously his identification of Sodom was within 5 miles of the area. Definitely not the northern part of the Dead Sea. So therefore it seems in the Gemara, and this is brought in the Das Mikra Atlas, which I agree with, that clearly that the location of Sodom should be in the lower part, the southern part of the Dead Sea, not the northern part. Where will we find Lot's wife? So as I told you today, the pillar of salt, which is in the image of a woman, is standing on the west side of that area, near Sodom. But remember, take a look. Lot is running away from Sodom towards Tzoar, which means no matter what, he's running southeast. Wherever Sodom is, he's running eastward. He's not in the mountains west of the Dead Sea. So therefore, it would be impossible to put the place where today is Lot's wife, where it says Lot's wife, would be impossible to put it over there. Furthermore, when Lot goes from Tzoar, he goes up to the mountains. So where does he go? He obviously goes eastward, because he gives birth to two nations, Ammon and Moab. And Ammon and Moab are sitting on the other side of the Dead Sea. So, by all likelihood, if we want to find the place where Lot's wife is, we will not find it on the west side today, where there's a big sign by the Israeli Ministry of Tourism, Lot's wife. That will not go. It looks good, it looks impressive, it does have the image of a woman turning back and looking at Sodom, yes indeed, and by the way, the whole mountain over there is one big pillar of salt. But that is probably not the original, that's probably not the location of Lot's wife. Okay. Chomas Yericho Shenivla. One more site that's mentioned is the walls of Yericho that were swallowed. This issue, the pinpointing Yericho and finding the archaeological evidence to the destruction of Yericho by Bnei Yisrael, has been a thorny issue for the last 30, 40 years. Go to your to the links which we have. Link number 2 is the aerial picture of Tel Sultan. Tel Sultan is identified today as the ancient city of Yericho. Fairly positive identification. What's interesting about this site is that the site runs today, the top layer on the site is from what era known as the Middle Bronze Age. The Middle Bronze Age ended about in the year 1500 BCE, which is before Bnei Yisrael come into Eretz Canaan. When Bnei Yisrael come into Eretz Canaan, probably around the 12th century BCE, there are no walls for Yericho, and there's no civilization in Yericho. And the Kaplan Kenyon, the notorious British archaeologist, who was not a very good friend of the Jews, got up and said there was no site of Yericho when Bnei Yisrael came in. So she has a problem with the story in Tanakh based on what she excavated. Now we have to keep in mind, excavations are done in a small section of the entire thing. So maybe the section she dug, she didn't find the stuff. But if she would have dug a little at another place, she might find. It's not that the place is thoroughly excavated. Number one. Number two, it's not correct to say that there is no civilization from the Late Bronze Age. The Late Bronze Age runs into the period when Bnei Yisrael are believed to have crossed into Eretz Canaan. It's not true. There is definitely evidence that the place was inhabited during the Late Bronze Age. The only thing that's missing are the walls. Whoa, what a coincidence. We're trying to see the place where the walls were swallowed up in the ground, and she comes along and she says, we don't have walls from that period. Right, you don't have walls, because those walls were swallowed up in the ground. The walls are made from mud bricks. And by the way, mud bricks, when they crumble, there's no way to reconstruct them. There's no way to figure out how they were before. So we definitely have a civilization from the time period when Nasal come in. We don't have walls, which should not bother us too much, because if the walls came tumbling down, as the Gemara also says, they were swallowed up in the ground, you won't find walls. What you do have is a place which is an oasis in the middle of the desert, and it's been inhabited for thousands of years before Bnei Yisrael come. It's one of the oldest cities in the world, is the city of Yericho. And all of a sudden, when it comes to this period, the end of the Late Bronze Age, beginning of the Iron Age, when Bnei Yisrael comes to Canaan, there's no civilization anymore. The place was never settled, except for a small settlement later on in Iron Age 2, which is in the days of the king. Now, this is kind of an unbelievable coincidence. Why would they never resettle the city of Yericho? If a city gets destroyed, all other cities are resettled again. The only reason can be, probably the most logical reason is that when Yisrael captured Yericho, he said, don't ever settle Yericho again, and he cursed the person who built it. And later on, indeed, in the days of Achav, there was a person named Chiel from Beit El who started rebuilding the city, and he paid the price for losing all his children already. So the story that's in Tanakh matches what we find today in Tel Sultan. So there's no big sign over here, Yeshua captured the site, but indeed the description can fit, the negative can fit the positive. So Tel Sultan is identified with the, as you see, a nice aerial picture over here, in the heart of the city of Yericho today, the oasis. You see the green lush from the spring nearby, and that fits the story of the Tanakh, the conquest of Yericho by Sefer Yeshua. I want to finish off on one note, an interesting thing. Last week, 2 weeks ago, I was in Eastern Europe, and I was traveling in the city of Vilna, and where the Vilna Gong was. And in the town of Vilna, there's a big river running by. And I took a picture of the river, for a reason which I'll tell you in a moment, and I was going to post it. But then I found out that this is not where the story happened, so therefore I didn't post the picture. The story is like this. When the Gwar's mother was a young girl, she fell into the river of Vilna, and was she fell into a river and was swept away and saved by a miracle. And Rav Chaim Volozhin, the Talmud of the Gwar, when he came to that site, he made a bracha, Baruch Shasav Ines, B'makom Hazeh. A person makes a bracha for an ace that happened to him, his father's, or his Rebbe. So Rav Chaim Volozhin made a bracha by that river, a miracle happened to him. So Talmidim turned to him, what miracle happened to you over here? He said, nothing happened to you. He said, yes, because my Rebbe's mother would have been, and she would have been killed. There would have been no Gra. And there would have been no Gra. So where would Rav Chaim Volozhin be? So therefore, he felt that it warrants to make a bracha. So, but today I found out the story is indeed authentic, but the story did not take place in the river of Vilna. It took place in a different town where his mother was born. So therefore I didn't quote it. But we do learn the halacha, the interesting halacha, that Rav Chaim Volozhin made a bracha not only for an ness that happened to his Rebbe, but an ness that happened to his Rebbe's mother, which enabled the girl to be born. So Rav Chaim Volozhin made the bracha for that also, Baruch Shasa Nehesh Lamakam.